providing you with the tools, knowledge, skills, and power to advance your career, grow your business, and build a better future for your community. We are the Tourism Academy. Welcome to Business Class. On this episode, I'm joined by award-winning tourism promoter, marketer, and trade representative, John Burridge from Travelbeat in the UK. John shares some of his insight on what makes clients' expectations more manageable and how to be a successful tourism marketer.
Hello, everybody. Steve Ekstrom here once again. Joining me in business class today, I have John Burridge, director at Travelbeat, based in the UK. One of the best parts about my job, John, is that I get to talk with people who are making their living and also making a bit of a difference in the tourism industry. So welcome to business class.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's great to be chatting with you.
It's nice to chat with you as always. I think the first time we chatted, and I appreciate you refreshing my memory the other day on this, I may have been ranting about a front desk person at a hotel who smelled of poor life choices and methamphetamines.
Yes, I think so. I think so. I don't think we can't name the city in the conference now.
No, we cannot, but I will tell you I haven't been back.
That makes two of us. There aren't many Brits that have heard of that place.
There aren't a lot of my people in my friend circle that have been or listed it as their top destinations. What is Travelbeat?
We are a sales and representation company. We also do a little bit of affiliate marketing. But for the most part, I guess not too dissimilar to you, Steve, is that our background is very much introducing people on the supplier side to people on the buyer side. And we call it relationship marketing. And everything that we do is really about those relationships and introducing our clients to people that can really help them excel their brand and really increase their reach, I guess.
It is a relationship-driven business, and I think people who aren't in it underestimate that.
I think so.
What would you say is a piece of advice for somebody who is looking to get started in the business?
I think it sounds a little bit cliched, I guess, but to me, relationships really are everything in this business, and the thing that we most commonly tell our partners or our clients or people who are looking to get into this industry is that, okay, we go all around the world to these wonderful conferences and we sit down in front of people and we have a speed networking meeting that might last 10 minutes or 15 minutes or 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. But that to me is not necessarily where the business gets done. I think that's where you meet the people. That's where you might strike up your conversation. But so often that's just the beginning. Even if you've maybe met that person before at a conference, I find it's very unlikely that they will remember you unless you have either given them a really unique story. And I know we were talking about one of those the other day, Steve, as well. And to remember you by. Or you've had a shared experience together. And I guess that's why so many people do get into travel is because of that shared experience that travel gives. I think you have to remember that that's what you kind of need to give the buyer, or that's what you need to give the person who you are trying to impress, for want of a better phrase, or trying to work with. Give them that moment to remember you by, whether that be in the bar, whether that be that story. So often we always say that the contract is only the beginning as well. I know a lot of people go out there and are hungry to bring in new contracts, and that may be their main KPI or their main goal that they're measured on within the business. But we very much find that unless you work at that relationship, a bit like a marriage, I guess, or having a significant other, is that contract isn't necessarily going to deliver unless you really put the work in.
I like the relationship advice part of that, and I could probably use a lot more of that.
I'm always available for therapy sessions.
Ooh, fantastic. Well, my dog is probably getting tired of hearing me rant, so I might be calling you more often. How did you find yourself at Travelbeat? How did you find yourself in this industry?
I guess I half fell into this industry, if I'm honest with you. I was thinking about this the other day. I guess maybe it's a little bit to do with nature and nurture, in that my...
I thought my dogs were going to make noise first.
Terrible. My dog is the best. He's one of those small, yappy little dogs. I guess it is like a nature versus nurture situation in that my dad used to work for a company called Pontins, which isn't really well known in the States. The only way I can kind of think of describing it is it's a bit like a holiday camp. But where families go, it's actually not too far, not too dissimilar to Dirty Dancing. And the way that the kind of the whole family goes off to the camp in the summer, and there's like organized fun, and everybody stays maybe in like a one room chalet or suite. And he used to work for them. So most of my summers growing up were spent half in the office of different kind of Pontins holiday camps. And I think there's still a couple here in the UK. Versus being at home, or maybe we might get to go away every so often. But I really kind of grew up within the industry and being introduced to all of these people with fascinating stories. But then I kind of went off and wanted to go down a PR route and wanted to just go down a press relations route. So started looking into that, did my degree, and ended up in theatre marketing. So I started up at a regional theatre in my hometown in Liverpool, and from there kind of continued along a theatre route. So marketing national tours around in the UK, doing some marketing for theatrical venues again around the UK, and then moved to London. Was given a wonderful opportunity to kind of learn more about tourism, but from a theatrical point of view. Did some wonderful work for kind of shows, Disney, Wicked. Inbound to the UK, and finally we're again given an opportunity to work with Broadway Inbound, and I think that's where my first foray into working inbound to the United States came from. We were working as Broadway Inbound's UK rep. From there it really snowballed, and we started to work with the likes of One World Observatory, which later became Legends, then moved into a year I did a stint with Warner Brothers, and was their travel trade salesperson for the Harry Potter, I guess, Warner Brothers Studio Tour of London, the making of Harry Potter, or Harry Potter Studio Tour. and that's kind of where Travel Beat was born. I was very nervous about leaving my old role and going kind of freelance, which Warner Brothers asked me to do. They kind of said, rather than being a Warner Brothers employee, can you do it as a freelancer? To their kind of all intents and purposes, then there was less admin. It meant I made more money. But that to me was quite, yeah, thinking about accountants and growing up and all that kind of good stuff. Very nervous. Did that for a year. Was very lucky that my other half already had a business, a travel digital marketing business, and he very graciously let me join him and share his accountant and limits public liability insurance and all that kind of good stuff. And that's kind of where, again, Travel Beat snowballed. And we now have clients in the US, the UK, and Sweden as well.
You dropped some names there, and I'm glad I have an umbrella nearby. Well, what are some of the brands that you're working with currently?
We work still with shows like Wicked, and we work with brands still like Warner Brothers. We've been really lucky that they've kept us on. For years to kind of help around, or maybe we just cling on and they let us go along for the ride. We also work with great brands that exist, again, globally. So one is Fotografiska, which just opened in New York around 18 months ago. We were lucky enough to work with the original Fotografiska in Stockholm, and then that progressed. There are now three venues open, and one opening in 2022. And I think that's what really excites us about what we do on a daily basis, is that we can be talking the same brand, but we can be talking about a completely different city. And Fotografiska in Stockholm, even though it might be a very similar exhibition, and some of the exhibitions do rotate, is that the mindset is very different. So working with Swedes and working with Sweden inbound, completely different to working with Americans and American inbound. But yeah, there are no 2 days that are the same.
What is something that you love most about your work?
I think it is the variety. I am definitely by no means diagnosed with ADHD, but I definitely have no attention span whatsoever. And for me, being able to flit in and out and do something over here for 2 minutes, which might be something to do with one of our British clients, and then go and help in a completely different city, to me, it keeps my brain active and it keeps me engaged. And I guess there's always a willingness to learn and always a willingness to try new things and wanting to take in new information. So for me, things like Tourism Academy and it being a hub for, again, for the industry to go and do things, I think for me, it's a really big plus. And I think it is that kind of, I have no attention span. I need stimulation. The clients definitely provide me with that from a completely selfish note. But then I would say it's the industry itself. I just love working in it. And the personality.
I think one of the things that I've pointed out a couple times on the podcast is that people who work in this industry and people who love to travel share a common trait, and that is a love to learn.
Absolutely.
What's been the most important lesson that you've learned on the road?
Never assume, I think, is the best information I've ever been given. Again, growing up in this industry, I think there are so many personalities in this industry. There are so many different nuances in this industry, and there are so many brands and things to think about that I don't think you can ever second guess anybody, and I don't think you can ever assume that what somebody else wants is the correct thing, if that makes sense.
Do you think people sometimes have a hard time articulating what they're looking for in an experience?
Yes, I think people have a hard time articulating what they want from an experience. But I think for us, I think there can be people within experiences that kind of go into the attraction side, or even within destinations, or even within any tourism business, that don't really understand what we do, I think, as that B2B part of the industry. And I think we can walk into a business or a new client or a new partner, and we'll have been brought in by a sales team or a marketing team who kind of know the industry but don't know how to infiltrate the industry. And I think because of that, we definitely see a lot of pushback initially until we start to see results from higher-ups, from that kind of C-suite, kind of, what are they doing? Why are we investing in this team? And then again, we can be all talk, or be perceived to be all talk within this industry. And then when you do start to see those sales rolling in, I think it does help to change perceptions. And I think that data-driven approach is so important at the moment. And I think that's why I kind of come back to that never assume moment. I think never assume that the people that you're working with fully understand what you do for a start. And then never really assume that the person is looking, never really assume that the, what I'm trying to say, that the business that you are working within, or the business that you think you are working within, is fully on board in terms of a knowledge piece.
Yeah, it does. And I think I found that too. Yes, you have to manage your team and your workload, but you also need to manage up.
Yes.
And managing up means sometimes teaching others what it is that you do and how well you do it. I had a boss close to 20 years ago who pulled me into his office and said, "You got a problem." I'm like, "What's the problem?" He says, "The CEO doesn't understand what you do." I'm like, "Oh, okay. You know, a couple million dollars in revenue. Okay. Let me explain this." But that's not uncommon. I don't think that's uncommon.
A quick reminder about the Tourism Academy, offering online, on-demand, and live in-person training so that you can create stakeholder alignment, demonstrate the relevance of tourism to your community, empower local businesses, and improve the local tourism experience so you can have more positive social mentions, longer stays, and more repeat high-volume visitors. Build a culture of inclusion while saving time and money with online tourism ambassador training and certification by the Tourism Academy, tourismacademy.org.
What's one of the biggest misconceptions you see new attractions having when they open?
The most common misconception we have is that tourism is like a tap, and that the second that someone like us walks in the door, or the second that they hire a salesperson, is that that's the moment that sales start. And this industry can be what can, I mean, we always recommend 3 years as a kind of a benchmark, but this industry can take years and years and years to break into certain tour operators or certain relationships or to certain distribution partners. And it's so often we tell our clients or our partners that for a long time, you're going to be the other woman in this industry, and some product manager or some tour operator is going to have to cheat on their current husband or their current wife with you in order to kind of push that relationship out. You can be a bit of an industry homewrecker. There are only so many things that somebody can do with their time, especially in a city like New York or a city like London, where I do think that your biggest competitor is time. They're going to pick those 8 things or those 10 things that they can do over 3 days, and you have to be one of those 8 or 10 things. So in order to do that with an established tour operator, you've got to fight to take something out. And I think that's one thing that we do tell our clients, is that it's a process, and it's going to take a while. We've been hired on day one that an attraction opened. And then we've been asked, where are the sales? Do you have a contract? do you have rates? Is that, what's that? Building things from the ground up, it takes a while. So yeah, that's definitely the.
I like the cheating spouse analogy. I never phrased it quite like that, but I think you're right in that you are competing for time. And I think that that's a big misunderstanding a lot of folks have. You know, you open the doors and people should flood in. There's a city like New York, you know, you have 40 something million tourists every year. All you have to do is open your doors.
Yeah.
Never mind the fact that there are 300 other attractions,
right,
of varying scales and size that they could go to.
Yeah.
That I think can be a hard pill to swallow sometimes for a client.
I think so.
Have you found that?
Yes. I think there's also different kinds of clients as well. I think you can go to a client that's maybe private equity or maybe more corporate. And those businesses, yes, they are hard on the bottom line and they are hard on sales, but there's almost less of a family mentality or a baby mentality, shall we say, in what the product is that they're promoting. And then you can walk into others where the founder is sat there and he's the owner, he's the MD, he's the CEO. Sorry, they are the MD, they are the CEO, they are the they are running the show. And that is an even tougher pill to swallow, is that I've invested all of this money, this is my business, why is it not selling? Bringing it back to the stat that you came up with earlier with the 40 million tourists in New York, it's often those family style businesses, or those kind of where their attraction is their baby, who've done that kind of back of a cigarette paper maths of, okay, 40 million tourists into New York. If I get 1% of those, then that's 400,000 people a year. And actually, that's quite a good number for me to hit. And I think, yes, you might get 1% of those in like 10 years or something when you caught up to your competition. Not.
There are attractions and businesses that open for the sake of business, and then there are those that open as passion projects. And with a passion project, I've found it's even more difficult to explain that not everybody shares your passion, and you have to take a look at it from a different angle.
Yes, absolutely.
Not everybody's as excited about the Amish Underwear Museum as you are.
No. I'm sure there's a niche somewhere, though. We can.
I mean, you know, there's one in every crowd. There's a lid for every trash can.
I can only agree and kind of say that, yes. And I think that's where sometimes the data does come in handy, even if you aren't seeing sales yet. We now have wonderful tools that Google provides us. It's kind of that. So how are the web stats, and how is everything that I'm maybe not in charge of doing? And is it all kind of across the board a little quiet? And why could that be? And maybe,
how are we moving that needle?
Yeah.
What are one or two things that you would hope to be able to accomplish in the next 5 to 10 years professionally?
I would love to continue to be challenged every day. I think that's something I definitely love and appreciate now. And I think the moment that constant challenge and that constant So yeah, the moment that that challenge goes away is definitely the moment that I would reconsider what I was doing and how I was doing it. Like, is travel the right business for me, I guess. I think from our point of view, we would love to work with more cities. I would love to explore how we would work with Dubai, for instance, or how we would maybe work inbound to Asia or even other cities kind of in the USA. It would be really interesting for us to kind of see, oh, how does Portland work as a town, or how does even kind of like a San Antonio work as a town. I think that would be really, really exciting and really interesting just to kind of try and, for me, try and infiltrate and learn more about the demographics. And I think that does come back to that constant need to learn. I'm such a geek. Like, I really kind of love to explore why does that city work in that kind of unique way, and why does that city mirror that city in kind of the way it works, even though they're 4,000 miles apart. I think that, mm-hmm. I think that's something that's really interesting. But I think if I was looking for a life goal as such, it would be to kind of diversify the business even more into other cities or the types of products, I guess.
Who has been the biggest influence so far on your business philosophy?
I don't know if there is one sole person, if I'm completely honest. I think I've been so lucky and had such a wonderful career up until now that I've been able to take little bits from different people, little snippets and how they've operated and how they've worked. I think my very first boss in a marketing department is a guy called Bill Elms. He still has his own marketing company in Liverpool, kind of that does arts, entertainment, things like that. He's also moved into producing. He taught me a lot about just the kind of fundamentals of marketing, to the point that rather than kind of being in university and doing my degree as I should have been, I basically sat in his office and worked during those kind of lectures, picked up the notes and just carried on. just carried on studying from afar, I guess. And then I think there are so many people that I've learned snippets from as I've gone along. People kind of like Sheila Wiley, I think I've had so many great conversations with her.
She's great.
She's had such a wonderful and varied career. I've learned, again, so much from that kind of New York crowd. Fred Dixon, I think, always has something inspirational and kind of, even if he doesn't mean to, something great to pick out and to kind of take with you. And then I think also some of the kind of maybe most insightful people are some of the theater producers we work with as well. I think learning about their side of the business and how they perceive marketing, or whether they've come from a marketing background and gone into producing, have always had kind of an influence on me, I guess.
What's a piece of advice you would give to somebody who's just starting out?
It's the same advice repackaged twice. And I think it would be, one, respect your elders in the industry, and two, don't be afraid of them at the same time. I think if you're walking into a networking event and you don't know anybody, or if you are walking into a workshop or a conference or something like an IPW for the first time, and again, you might not know people, is the tourism industry can be quite clicky. I think you will definitely in bigger cities, you will find kind of little cliques of people, and it can be quite difficult to break into them. But I think what I very quickly learned is, if I made a beeline for, I call them my tourism mums. if I made a beeline for a group of ladies of a certain age, by the end of the night, not only would you have five new best friends in them, is that you probably make 50 connections from them. And I actually, coming back to kind of people I look up to, I think people like Mary Farrell, again, are such wonderful networkers and influencers. Those are the types of people I would make a beeline for, is They're the people who know everybody in the industry, have been around this industry, can help with just handy hints and advice. I think never discount somebody because maybe they don't look like they know what PPC is, or they don't look like they know what SEO is. Like, these are the people that are kind of living this industry and have lived this industry for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. These are the kind of almost five, that makes them sound old, but tourism Bibles that you kind of want to crack open and learn from.
These ladies of a certain age.
I think so.
You know, many of the names that you mentioned were people who, when I first got started, you know, we were all on the same plane. So I remember taking sales trips with Fred and Sheila and Mary and, you know, all being in the same hotel together. So I'm not that old. I can't possibly be that old. Okay. When you're preparing for a Zoom,
yep.
Do you put on proper trousers or are you wearing shorts with a nice shirt?
I am wearing...
You don't have to show me.
I'm wearing jeans. It's not that hot in the UK right now that we need to wear shorts, but I have done that. And I think I would hope that most people through the pandemic have done that.
I would think so. I have, my sister makes fun of them, but I have some really comfortable harem pants. They're outrageously comfortable.
I love the quote of them.
I probably look like a couples counselor at an inclusive resort when I'm wearing them, but they're so comfortable. I get away with them more often than I should. Not today. Today I'm wearing khakis. If folks want to learn more about TravelBeat, your work, or get in touch with you, how would you suggest they do that?
Check out our website, which is just travelbeat.co.uk. We are on Instagram, Facebook.
And pick a number 1 to 10.
7.
What is your proudest accomplishment?
My proudest accomplishment, it might not mean very much to a lot of the listeners, but here in the UK, we have the MOBO Awards, which is the Music of Black Origin, and they've been going, I could be totally wrong, but I think since the mid-80s, maybe slightly later. And for a very small period of time, they did community awards called the eMobo Award. And I was working with a company called Merseyside Dance Initiative at that moment. We, for want of a better phrase, had a fractious relationship. I think the CEO was quite hot-headed, knew exactly what she wanted and how she was going to get it. Even if, as we said, kind of that kind of passion project. Even if we kind of doing some crazy things, which we did. But we managed to win this MOBO Award for Merseyside Dance Initiative. And in front of a crowd of about 18,000 people, out the CEO walks kind of happier than anything. Just to this, yeah, huge crowd cheering on Merseyside Dance Initiative, knowing who this little business was all of a sudden, this kind of tiny not-for-profit business. And I think I will never win another award. I don't think where 18,000 people will be in the crowd when that person receives it. And it just the kind of the gravitas that it brought to that company is kind of me that I wrote the bid, put everything together, created videos, created all the packages. So yeah, I think that I like to think I had a little piece of that award.
It's rewarding to feel like you got to make a difference, isn't it?
Yes.
It is. Well, and that's the reason I had you here in Business Class. So thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. I really, really enjoyed it.
And you as well. I will wrap up this recording. And many of the folks that you mentioned are also going to be on the program. So we have folks from Visit Britain. We have folks from New York City, many of the states and cities that you mentioned. So I appreciate that.
Anything we can do to promote.
We'll make your clients happy. Here we go.
Take a course. Train your people. Teach what you love. Promote your products. Donate today at tourismacademy.org, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.